For the Medical Journal of Australia, I'm Kate Swanell. Welcome to the MJA podcast. This podcast is recorded and produced on the lands of the Djabal and Djerriwarr peoples. I would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of this land, their elders past, present and emerging. On the 15th of August, Insight Plus published an article by Australian researchers on breast density and whether women should be notified about their dense breasts. The article talked about the possible downsides of notification, including anxiety and the impact on health services. One of many comments on that article came from two American women who are co-founders of a website called densebreastinfo.org. Dr. Wendy Berg is Professor of Radiology at the University of Pittsburgh School of Medicine. She is also a breast cancer survivor.
Women can handle the truth, they need to know the truth, and in knowing the truth, they can become empowered to seek additional screening, and it is on the medical community to become educated and to develop those options to help improve cancer detection.
Joining Dr. Berg as my special guest today is Ms. Joanne Pushkin, a New Yorker who has campaigned extensively and successfully for legislation to mandate notifying women about their breast density so they can seek supplemental screening. She is also a breast cancer survivor. Thank you both. We're talking about breast density, and you two responded on a story that we published in Insight Plus several weeks ago, which sparked my interest because the American situation in terms of notification of breast density to patients is different from what it is here. And we're obviously in the earlier stages of having those discussions. What made you comment on the story that we'd written? Was it about breast density itself, or was it about testing or extra testing for women with dense breasts?
Our concern was that the story emphasized the stress that can be caused to women by telling them they have dense breasts and that cancer can be hidden on the mammogram if you don't have something to do about it. This has been the story in the United States as well, to protect women from that potential harm of the stress of knowing that there's a limitation to the mammogram. I would take the opposite tack and say women can handle the truth. They need to know the truth. And in knowing the truth, they can become empowered to seek additional screening. And it is on the medical community to become educated and to develop those options to help improve cancer detection. We know that we miss 40% of cancers, at least, in dense breasts. We don't see those cancers that are typically invasive that don't have calcifications. They just don't show up. And that's true even when we do the 3D mammogram or tomosynthesis. It is a little bit better, but it doesn't solve this problem.
What does having dense breasts do for your risk of getting breast cancer itself? Does it increase the risk?
Yes, unfortunately, dense breasts are a double whammy. They increase your risk of developing breast cancer because most of that dense tissue is glandular tissue. And the more glandular tissue, the more cells are dividing and potentially responding to estrogen, and the more they can make mistakes and develop into cancer compared to a fatty breast. So the absolute risk is actually about fourfold higher in the extremely dense compared to the fatty breast. And we define breast density in one of four categories, and at least one good thing is the terminology is pretty standard worldwide. We have so-called BI-RADS, or breast imaging reporting and data system terminology. About 10% of women have fatty breasts. About 40% of women have scattered fibroglandular density. Another 40% have heterogeneously dense breasts, and about 10% have extremely dense breasts. And it's those last two categories that we consider dense, and about 40% of all women who have mammograms have dense breasts. So it's a common problem. And that's one of the challenges or pushbacks from the medical community is, oh my gosh, if we told all these women with dense breasts that they needed to have something other than or in addition to a mammogram, that's a huge number of women and we can't do that right now. And so it's the enemy of good is perfect. You know, not every woman wants to seek additional screening, but if she does, in fact, want to do that and is willing to go through several hoops to get it, it could benefit her. My own experience, my own personal experience, is what drove me to work with Joanne on the website densebreastinfo.org, because I knew enough. I knew I had dense breasts. I had a family history of breast cancer. We had a guideline back in 2007 from the American Cancer Society recommending that women should have an MRI if they had an elevated lifetime risk of about 20%. My own risk was 19.7%. I said, you know, I think I'm going to get an MRI. And I had already educated my own doctor about supplemental screening because I led a trial of ultrasound that we did MRI in the last year of that trial and found excellent results, especially with MRI. My own doctor, when I said I'd like to get a script for the MRI, said, tell me again why you want this. It was like, oh gosh, you know, I just had spent a good hour plus sending him all these papers, my own papers, the studies, telling him how to calculate risk, all these things, and he didn't understand. I said, you know, we've got to educate women directly because you can't just send them back to their doctors if their doctors don't know. And of course, you know, long story short, I got the MRI and found my own cancer, and it was early and small and easily treated. And I think at the end of the day, all any woman wants is if she's going to be screened for breast cancer, she wants to be able to find it early.
Yes.
And she wants to know that the test that she's taking is actually going to give her an accurate result.
Yes.
And unfortunately, we know the mammogram doesn't do that very well in women with dense breasts.
Yeah. Joanne, was that your personal experience as well?
As well, no family history, though. Was not concerned about that at all, but had extremely dense breasts and was faithfully going for mammograms every year and normal mammogram year after year after year. And one day during a self-exam, I feel a lump. And I wasn't particularly worried because I had had a fairly recent normal mammogram. But, you know, they tell you to call your doctor, and I certainly did. And they brought me in for a diagnostic mammogram. And the day the lump was so big that I could feel it, it didn't show up on that mammogram. And yet there it was on the ultrasound performed 10 minutes later. And when I asked why it was missed, the mammo tech said, oh, honey, you've got dense breasts. That's going to be a very hard find for us. And I remember saying to her, wait, what? And so I learned I had breast cancer, and I learned it had been missed because I had dense tissue, and I learned I had dense tissue all within 5 minutes of each other. And so certainly, if I had understood the masking effect, and that is the most immediate concern for a patient, long-term risk, 5-year, 10-year, certainly is important to know, but I want to know what's going to happen on this mammogram I'm about to have.
Yes.
If I had understood the masking effect, I certainly would have asked about, you know, is there another tool that we should be talking about? Not being told that information, I was effectively denied the opportunity to have that conversation and denied almost, you know, the opportunity for an earlier stage diagnosis. You can't have a conversation about something you don't know you should be having a conversation about.
Are mammograms freely available to women in the U.S.?
Over the age of 40, the Affordable Care Act requires the insurers to cover screening mammography in full at no cost to the patient. Unfortunately, there's a substantial cost for the diagnostic testing if something is found. That issue is something that several states, including New York, actually Joanne pioneered the legislation there to require the insurers to cover the diagnostic testing as well.
Fantastic.
Supplemental screening with ultrasound or MRI is usually covered by insurance, but subject to a copay or coinsurance payment or deductible. Right. So it can vary from about $100 for an ultrasound to as much as several thousand dollars for an MRI. One of the nice things that's happening worldwide is this abbreviated MRI, which is a much shorter scan that can be done for much lower cost because it doesn't take as much time. And in the United States, there are many centers that now offer that. And often the patient has to pay directly for that without insurance billing. But the cost is on the order of anywhere from $200 to $600 out of pocket, which is still a sizable amount, but at least it makes it within reach for many patients, and especially if they're at higher risk.
What about uninsured patients?
Uninsured patients can still get a mammogram. There are programs in each state that cover uninsured women. It sometimes, again, takes jumping through a few hoops, going to a clinic first and getting a script and that kind of thing. There also are, importantly, programs in every state that cover the diagnostic and treatment portion, including reconstructive surgery after mastectomy. So there's really no substantial barrier for women who do not have insurance as long as they're willing to do the work to navigate the system. We, of course, do screening every year, starting at 40. The most important decade to do annual screening is actually in the 40s, because when cancers do develop, they're going to tend to grow more rapidly. And we have a bigger problem with dense tissue in women in their 40s. As we go through menopause, the breasts tend to get a little less dense.
Okay.
And so the mammogram is actually a little bit better as we get older, at least in some women. Many women will stay dense throughout their lives, but at least it's a little bit better overall. You know, if you're going to do any mammography in the 40s, you should do it every year and probably up to at least through menopause. So if you're late going through menopause, that's an even higher risk as well.
I'm chatting today with Wendy Berg and Joanne Pushkin about the importance of educating women and their physicians about breast density and its importance in breast cancer screening. The website they started, densebreastinfo.org, is a treasure trove of resources and educational material for both patients and doctors. Check the show notes for this podcast for the full link to the website. If you are enjoying this podcast, you can find our back catalogue of episodes at nja.com.au/podcasts. You can subscribe to our feed for free on your favourite podcast platform just by searching for Medical Journal of Australia and pushing the subscribe button. Back to our chat.
Can a woman tell she has dense breasts without having a screen? Like, can you feel it on self-exam or?
That's a really good question. And the answer is basically no. Fatty breasts can feel kind of lumpy, and so can dense breasts. It is true that if you are very thin with very little body fat, you tend to have dense breasts, but that nothing is 100%. You can certainly have extremely dense breasts and be overweight as well, but it is not something you can tell by the way they feel. You can tell on a CT scan or an MRI, but of course we don't routinely do those just to check the density of the breast. So the most common way that we find out is on the first mammogram.
Yeah, and that's a common misconception I hear from women, that they have fibrocystic breasts and think that's the same thing as dense breasts.
Joanne, do you think the don't tell them because it'll make them anxious argument is something that should be stricken from the entire medical world?
I can barely talk about that and stay calm.
Yeah.
Of course, I approach this from the horror side of the experience, you know, of someone who would have gladly taken the temporary anxiety of additional testing to know I had cancer and to have found it early. You know, and we know in dense breasts, the addition of any additional screening tool increases cancer detection over mammograms alone. You know, when we talk about unnecessary testing, I mean, you know, let's be clear, the additional testing either will or won't find cancer. And so are we saying it's only unnecessary when it doesn't find cancer? So, and the only way to know that is to do the test. I mean, so are we saying that any medical procedure or test that doesn't result in an abnormal finding is unnecessary? How ridiculous.
Yes.
And as I commented online on that piece, mammography may in fact not be very helpful in women with dense breasts. You know, it's been proven to reduce the chance of dying from breast cancer overall. But if you actually look at the subset of women with dense breasts, it's pretty hard to prove that it actually reduces the chance of dying from breast cancer overall at the population level. You know, it does certainly in many cases, and we do find early breast cancers if they have calcifications or architectural distortion, but it also misses a lot. And I think it's very important to take another step back and say, okay, let's say you were starting from scratch. Would you actually, knowing everything you know right now, would you choose mammography for the screening of all women? I don't think so. You know, we actually can do screening much more effectively and for probably lower cost if you did an MRI, especially if you're talking every 2 years. In women with dense breasts, you could do an abbreviated MRI every 2 years for probably less cost than the cost of doing the tomosynthesis mammogram, at least. And you'd certainly find many more cancers. MRI works in any breast density.
You should be stopping mammograms and going straight to MRI.
If you had to do it all over again, that would be definitely the way to do it. That said, not every woman can tolerate an MRI. There's some, you know, it's done in a tunnel. So some women have claustrophobia. Some women have a pacemaker and the magnet isn't going to work with that. It's not good. Yeah. Or they may have like spinal surgery and fixation rods, things like that. So there are going to be some women. MRI is not perfect for every single person, but it is far more effective. I mean, if we look at cancer detection per 1,000 women screened, on a mammogram, it's about 5 cancers we'll find. If we did an MRI instead, the first year, we'd actually find up to 16 to 20 cancers. In the subsequent years, even after a normal mammogram, we're going to find at least 6 or 7 more, so twice as many. And the cancers found with MRI are small, node negative, very early, very easy to treat. So interestingly, I've actually heard from medical systems, well, if we did that in everybody, we wouldn't need chemotherapy anymore and we'd lose money because we wouldn't get paid for that.
Oh, no.
I'm thinking, oh, no. Yeah, it depends on which hat you're wearing. But as a patient, I'd much rather not have to have chemotherapy. And I'd much rather have a very simple, easy to treat early diagnosis of breast cancer. It really is a no-brainer.
Sounds like we have a lot of education to do here.
And everywhere. It's not just in Australia. In the United States, our first density notification law was in 2009. But even that law in Connecticut does not tell a given woman that her breasts are dense. It just requires that she gets some information that breast density can be a problem. So it actually causes a lot of confusion, doesn't necessarily help. And so, we've been doing this for a long time, but we haven't really gotten it right yet. In Pennsylvania, we now have laws, as there are in New York and Illinois, that require insurance to pay for a screening MRI, at least in certain populations. And New Jersey has a very restrictive, just extremely dense-breasted women. Well, they have to have MRI coverage. But these are important steps as well, reducing the barriers. But I think even with those laws, most women don't know. They don't know that they could get an MRI, and their doctors don't know. And until we start implementing it, and I gather we're just about to do this at University of Pittsburgh, that it's actually in the orders for breast imaging, that when they're ordering a mammogram, they have to answer certain questions about density and risk, and they're told, hey, you know what? Your patient qualifies for an MRI. Yeah. Do you want to get one? And that should help immensely with improving this communication, the knowledge of the doctors, the knowledge of the patients, and access, which really at the end of the day is what is needed. It's just about figuring out how to do it.
Joanne, I'm guessing you've been fighting this battle in every state.
Well, I live in New York, and so I worked for the New York Inform Law, and that went into effect in 2013. And we were the first state to actually inform women that they have dense breasts after their mammogram. It was a huge fight. The lobbying effort to try to kill that bill was of legend in Albany, our state capital, but it passed unanimously. And so that was the very first state. And then many states modeled their laws after New York's.
If Australia goes down the notification pathway, what kind of pushback can we expect?
Here in the States, part of it was referring provider lobbying groups were nervous about that. It was a new conversation that was going to be had now. There were insurance concerns. Do women need to? And then we get into the ridiculousness of, you know, don't get her nervous. Don't tell her that. So it can be on many different fronts. But by now, the evidence is so clear that women can handle the information, that, you know, if they navigate and get the supplemental screening, it is detecting cancers. It certainly seems like a tide that should not be turned back.
Early on, even the radiology community was hesitant to let women know that they had dense breasts. And the fear there was that if they knew that the mammogram wasn't a perfect test, they might not get the mammogram.
Yeah.
And that is not the message that we're trying to give women. It still finds about 60% of the cancers, and it usually still finds them early when it does. It's just that it is not a perfect test. It is the starting point. If you can get an MRI, you may in fact not need to get a mammogram, but that's not the case everywhere, obviously. And, you know, we don't want to discourage breast screening. That is certainly not the message. So I just want to be clear about that. But again, there tends to be a paternalistic attitude to protect women from the truth rather than telling them the truth and explaining what to do, which to me seems just as easy.
Tell us a bit about Dense Breast Info. There seem to be a lot of resources available for doctors there. And I think, Joanne, you wanted to tell us about some free educational material there for doctors. Is it something doctors worldwide can access?
So the website launched in 2015 was developed specifically for patients and for health providers so that everyone involved in that conversation about that woman's mammogram had the same information, the patient, her referring provider, and her breast radiologist. And so as part of the data track that we have for health providers is a free continuing education course, Dense Breast and Supplemental Screening, can be accessed on the website within the health provider tab.
Fantastic.
And yes, it is available worldwide. And I mean, we actually have details about Europe and many different countries and their policies on screening. And I know there's been some interest from Breast Screen Australia and various Inform organizations there as well. There's not a lot that women can do to lower their risk or lower their breast density. There are medications that do lower risk, but they have side effects too. Particular estrogen drives at least 70% of all breast cancers. And so blocking estrogen, either blocking the receptor or blocking the production, if you're after menopause, though there are medications to do that. Tamoxifen premenopausal blocks the receptors, and aromatase inhibitors, so-called, block the production after menopause. But tamoxifen has a risk of blood clots and can cause hot flashes and has other risks. And aromatase inhibitors can cause osteoporosis. And some women, like myself, had a lot of joint pain. And so the compliance with taking those medications is actually not great, although they do exist. Other than that, obviously, things like reducing alcohol intake, that's actually one of the probably most important things that we can do, because the risk of breast cancer is very much dependent on the dose of alcohol. So the more you drink, the higher your risk. And there is no point at which there's no risk. So it's at least worth being conscious of. And then gaining weight after menopause is another risk factor. And that's something that in theory we can do something about. It's not always easy, obviously, but you know, good exercise regime, good diet, and not being overweight and not drinking too much. Those are things that we can control that will reduce your risk. But I had a strong family history, as I mentioned, and did everything I could. You know, I had my first child as young as I could, 26. I breastfed each child as long as I could. I don't have the pathogenic mutation, and I still got the breast cancer. But my family does carry the mutation, and that's actually another interesting thing, that you're basically never off the hook. So sometimes they say, well, you're not high risk if there's a mutation in your family and you test negative, you don't have to worry. That's not really true. Certainly wasn't true for me. Even after having had breast cancer, there's no point in one's life where you can relax about it either. There's always risk. The older we get, the more risk we have for developing cancer, really of all kinds. That includes breast cancer. The peak is around menopause, because there's a lot of estrogen production and a lot of ups and downs in the estrogen that kind of wax the breast tissue and gets it stimulated and then cuts it off and stimulates it and cuts it off, which is the perfect recipe for developing cancer. You really need to be cognizant of your breasts around menopause.
Joanne, do you have a last message perhaps for general practitioners or primary care physicians?
Love to let them know that there are patient tools on the website that might be great for the clinical office setting. We have a printable patient fact sheet that they can download and hand out to assist with conversations and an introduction to the issue. There's a brochure, there are educational patient videos. So a tremendous number of tools to get everybody educated.
Fantastic. Thank you both for your time.
Thank you.
My thanks to my special guests today. Don't forget that all our podcasts are open access and available at www.mja.com.au/podcasts. Or you can subscribe to our feed at iTunes. My name's Kate Swanell, and we'll see you next time.